Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Dance Music Sex Romance podcast. I, as always, am Zachary Hoskins, and with me today is Stuart Willoughby, who is the author of a book that came out, I believe it was last fall. Is that right?
Yeah.
Minneapolis Rain, and it's a book about your kind of, I guess we can call it a pilgrimage to Minneapolis for Celebration 2017. So when your book came out last year, it was I kind of missed it in the shuffle of all the other Prince books that were coming out. But it seems like other people might have done this too, because just like keeping track of your social media, it seems like a lot of people have been buying it recently. It's on the bestseller list in Amazon, and I have to suspect that it's kind of catching on because of people getting ready to make their own trips for the second celebration.
I think so. I think that could be the case. Yes.
So Stuart, let's address, since you asked me if I could understand your accent, and since it's also a recurring theme in the book, let's address where you're from, just so people know. You're the second person from the UK that I've talked to on this show.
Right, I'm from the northeast of the UK, up north.
It's sort of you said in the book it's sort of a small town near Leeds. Is that
yeah? I'm about 50 miles north of Leeds. So
okay,
it's I'm kind of 100 miles from the Scottish border and about 50 miles north of Leeds. So yeah, it's up there to London. To London, it's 250 miles.
Yeah, that's for a small country like England. That's a ways.
That's a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you know those of you listening, if you've read the book, or when you do read the book, basically everybody in Minneapolis thinks that Stuart is Scottish. It turns into like a running joke, basically. So let's step back just a little bit. I want to talk about the book, but first, and you kind of do talk about this in the book, but everybody basically that comes on the show, I always ask them, you know, what their kind of history with Prince is, how they got into his music and when. And I think you have a kind of an interesting story about this.
Yeah. It goes back a long time now, 36 years possibly. Mm-hmm. When I was 12, I went to a pal's house after school, and I think we were going to watch a video. Probably, I think it might have been Rocky III. We were going to see, and he had an older brother who was probably 17, 18, something like that. And he was in the what we call a dining room. He was in the dining room listening to some records. Why the turntables in the dining room, I've no idea, but that's where it was. So I sort of stopped paying attention to the film and started listening to the music that was playing in the other room, and then I went into there and basically asked my friend's brother what the record was that he was playing, and he did. I kind of think he'd borrowed the record from someone, because he wasn't that sure about who it was, and he gave me the record cover, and I looked at it. And we basically just sat and listened to the record, and that was it. I was blown away. And I think probably a week later or something, I asked my parents to buy me the record, and that was that. So that was 1983.
And the record was 1999?
It was the 1999 album, yes.
That was pretty early times for Prince in the UK. I mean, I know that he came to London and played a show during the Dirty Mind tour, but
yeah.
I mean, especially for a 12-year-old in Northern England, this is probably this is about as early.
I was on my own.
Yeah, right.
For a long time.
So what kind of stuff were you listening to before you had this moment?
Just kind of, I grew up listening to 60s and 70s rock, mm-hmm. and a bit of sort of folk music and stuff like that. And when I kind of started getting my own taste, I kind of I just listened to kind of things that were kind of that I heard of, and one of the main bands that I heard of was Adam and the Ants,
mm-hmm.
And that was kind of that was the first record I bought was Adam and the Ants record, and I kind of went on from there really. So yeah, I didn't really have a musical taste as such. Like I say, I grew up on sort of hoary old British rock from the 1960s and 70s. But yeah, it kind of when I heard Prince, that kind of blew the doors wide open, and it was literally the first time I'd ever heard. I think it was literally the first time I'd ever heard electronic music at all. And yeah, it kind of steered me in a. It took my kind of taste went in that direction because of that, I think.
I can see Adam and the Ants being kind of a gateway to Prince, at least visually. He was really kind of pioneering that new romantic kind of look.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I think from an aesthetic type perspective, yeah, it's spot on. It's like a natural progression. They were very similar in kind of in the flamboyance and all that type of stuff.
I think if I recall correctly, in your book, you kind of talked about how it was kind of a solitary, you know, being a Prince fan at this time, yeah, in that place was kind of a solitary pursuit for you.
Definitely. For a long time, I didn't know anybody else who liked Prince at all. And I kind of when sort of probably 18 months, a year later, or whatever, whenever Purple Rain came out, mm-hmm. And when Doves Cry was on the radio and things like that, people were talking about it, and I was kind of like, yeah, that's the people are catching on now. But yeah, it took a little while, and for a long time, a lot of my friends were just like, yeah, he's really strange. where have you even heard about this guy? And I got a lot of that when I was younger, so yeah, that was quite funny.
It is kind of interesting, you know, being like, just the gender norms, I guess, that are enforced when you're a teenager.
Yeah,
you can be it can be a little, you know, for just like a straight guy to admit that he likes Prince. There, I remember being a little reticent about that too in my youth. Obviously, I've gotten over that, but there is an interesting kind of, you know, it makes you feel a little self-conscious.
Definitely. I had that a lot at the time. Yeah, it was kind of a lot of the time people would ask me, and it was all that, always that thing that kids are like when they ask you what type of music you like, and it's kind of, and they form opinions about you all the time, and
right,
it's kind of that whole thing. And a lot of the times I was, like you, very reticent to say, yeah, that I was a Prince fan. It was kind of, yeah, I'll just keep that on the low down. Just keep quiet about that one, and I'll mention some things that I think they might like. And that's kind of how it went for a little while, yes.
So, how did you get from hearing Prince for the first time in 1983 and then taking this, you know, transatlantic trip 33 years later,
yeah,
34, yeah, give or take? So I mean, were you kind of a fan all the way through? Did you sort of slip in and out? I mean, there's always, a lot of us have kind of waxed and waned in our appreciation of his music.
I probably felt the same. I think from sort of discovering him in 83 and then sort of the Purple Rain and all that stuff, and then Sign of the Times and Love Sexy. I mean, I have memories of going and buying every album literally the weekend that it was released, all through the 80s, and it kind of, And it's like that old saying when people say, oh, it's kind of, he soundtracked my life. I think that's true for a lot of Prince fans, and I think it's certainly true for me. I mm-hmm. can remember what I was doing. I can remember being at school doing exams and stuff like that, and everything kind of ties into that. Every album, I mean, silly little things like when the Diamonds and Pearls album came out, I'd just come out of hospital having my appendix out, so I sent my mum to the shop to buy it. So it's little silly things that it just kind of all memories are created from it. And like most fans, I can see that there was a point where sometimes the things that he did weren't great. And I think somebody who's been a fan for a long time, I think we're allowed to say that, and we can kind of appreciate that he did things that were kind of unexpected. But overall, you can kind of see that he was doing those things for growth and for kind of to push himself. And I think I kind of went along with that. And there were albums that I was thinking, what on earth is he doing, and why has he made that decision, and that doesn't sound anything like I think it should sound, and all that kind of thing. But I think that was kind of part of the fun of being a Prince fan, that you never knew where you were going to go, where he was going to take you. Like the fact that every album's different. When I was growing up, I had lots of friends who said, "Oh, I don't really like Prince," and I was like, if you say you don't like him, then you haven't listened to him, because every album that he makes is something different. And I spent a lot of my sort of childhood and youth making mixtapes for people who said they didn't like Prince, and then giving them to them, and then them coming back 3 weeks later and saying, "Oh my God, I love Prince." And that's kind of carried on now. I part on a record store now, and over the last couple of years, I've kind of turned lots of people onto him that weren't aware of what he did and or how big he was. And lots of people that come into our store are kind of younger generations that weren't around in the 80s, so they didn't kind of realize like how much of an iconic artist he was. As a fan, I've never kind of gone away from him. But there have been periods where I've thought, yeah, this is not as great as it once was.
Right. Yeah, something that I've been thinking about lately is it's just that the fact that I love his music so much makes me almost more critical when there's something that I don't like about it. It's like I'm grading it on an unfair curve.
Since you took your love away, I go out every night and sleep all day. Since you took your love away.
So let's talk a little bit about this trip, because I think, you know, one of the things that you kind of, obviously, you've been a Prince fan. I think you mentioned that you went down to see a couple of the O2 shows in 2007. But this level of, you know, you never traveled to another country because of him while he was alive.
No.
and I think this is kind of just in people that I've talked to since his passing. It's sort of a recurring theme. I think we all kind of lost our minds a little bit, or at least, you know, some kind of inhibitions, or, you know, so like whatever was holding us back from doing, you know, something, a dramatic activity like this.
Yeah.
It seems like this happened to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the thing that stopped me doing it was kids, was having a family. My wife and I travelled across America a long time ago, probably 10, 12, 13 years ago now, and we travelled right across America from one side to the other. And the one place that I didn't go was Minnesota, because I always thought I would go there. I always thought I would go there at some point as a separate sort of thing. But then getting married and family and having children and it all kind of got in the way of that, and I kind of put it on the back burner. And then at some I don't know when it was, but at some point I thought, I'll probably never do that now. But when what happened,
right.
Yeah, I think it did hit a lot of people really hard, me included. And I talk about it in the book, but I say that I've never kind of been affected by the passing of somebody that I've never met, and B, a celebrity, like a celebrity. And I've never felt like that before. And when it happened, I was inconsolable for several days, like most fans were, and I got hundreds of messages of people that knew me, that knew that I loved him, and messages of support and condolences and stuff. And after a couple of days, right. when I finally sort of came around a little bit and started to talk about it, literally the first thing that my wife said was, "You need to go." And I asked her if she wanted to come with me, and she said no. She said, "My wife has seen Prince live. She's seen him in concert, and she likes his music, but she's not. I wouldn't call her a fan. She's not really a fan of any type of music, to be honest. she listens to it because she has to, I think, because she's married to me. But she doesn't kind. She's not kind of. She's never been sort of emphatically into any kind of music or anything like that. But like I say, she's seen him several times. But when she said go, she immediately said, I would hold you back. She said, you would go, you will go and have a great experience. She said, and I kind of wouldn't really appreciate it as much. So that was that. She basically said, if it hadn't been for her, I don't think I would have went. Just because it was really expensive.
Right, right.
And B, because I've got five children, some of whom are only small children. I've got 5-year-olds and 7-year-olds and 10-year-olds, and I've never been away from home before, away from them for more than 1 or 2 days. So to do it was a huge thing.
One thing that kind of struck me, I'm going to sort of, you know, transition into talking about the book specifically. One thing that kind of struck me about what you describe of the first year that, you know, Minneapolis and Paisley Park did this kind of celebration to commemorate Prince is, you know, I've noticed I'm preparing to go for Celebration 2018. I'm going to be going next week. And there's a lot of, you know, there's guided tours and all of this stuff that it seems like there wasn't. You kind of had to make your own guided tour when you went last year.
Yeah, there was nothing. I kind of when I decided that I was going, I put a kind of a little thing on social media saying that I was going to do it. And I invited people to come along and said, if anybody wants to come, by all means, get in touch. And I ended up taking two guys, one of them, Jonathan. His mum asked me if he could come, and I said yes. And he used to work in the record shop with me. He's now at university. And then he asked if his friend Ben could come, and I said, yeah, come along. Met his parents, and they were fine. And it kind of went from there. So the next thing we did was, this was before Celebration 2017 had been announced.
Okay.
It hadn't actually been announced,
I don't
think.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So basically, our plan was to write on a piece of paper all the Prince kind of related places that we could find, or already knew about, pretty much in my case, because I'm that sad. But it's kind of, we made a huge list of places, and then the celebration was announced, so we added that to our kind of itinerary. And I had a list of probably about 40 places. And you're right, there wasn't any kind of, when we got there and we hired a car and drove around all these places, we were by ourselves.
Yeah.
there was at most of the places that we went to, there was nobody else there.
What are some of the, just for the for the benefit of people who haven't read the book, what are some of the places that you did? You don't have to tell me all 40, but
okay. So we went to Moonsound Studio, which was in the house on South Stevens Avenue, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. We went there, and we went to pretty much all of the houses that Prince lived in as a child. We went to the hospital where he was born. We went to every school that he went to. A lot of the schools aren't actually there anymore, but we still went. We went to a lot of the clubs that he played in. I think all of the clubs that he played in. We did a tour of First Avenue. Pretty much even things, like I say, things that weren't even there anymore. We went to Chuck Orr's guitar shop that's not even there. And we couldn't find that. And we asked somebody in another store on the street, and they've never heard of it, so we eventually found the spot, and we just stopped on the spot. But we went to the site of the old Glam Slam Club. We went to Bunkers. We went to pretty much everywhere. And like I said, there was about 40. We went to the purple and yellow houses, or what's left of them, just mm-hmm. kind of like the gates and the driveway now. We went to pretty much all of those. And one of the first houses that we went to was a house that Prince lived in. It was the house that his dad threw him out of when he was 12 or 13, allegedly. And we got there, and it was the first full day we were there. And we pulled up outside. I pulled the car up outside the house, and we got out, and it was pouring with rain. And we started taking some photos of this little house. And a guy came walking kind of out of the house, and I was thinking, oh, blimey, we're taking pictures of his house. He's gonna go crazy. And he came over to us, and I started apologising because I'm British. And he just kind of stopped me and said, "It's fine, it's okay." And he said, "Are you Prince fans?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Where have you come from?" I said, "England." And he said, "You must be big fans." I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I'm pleased to meet you. I'm Reese." And I said, "Oh, pleased to meet you, Reese." And he said, "I'm married to Prince's sister, Taika." And I just went, "Oh, okay." And he was lovely. He was really nice. He showed us around the house. We didn't go inside, but he kind of showed us around the house, and he was pointing out Prince's bedroom and stuff, and telling us lots of stories about him as a kid. And it must have been about maybe 5 p.m. when we were there, I would think. And I said to him, "Have you seen anybody else here today?" And he said, "You're the first people I've seen today. I've been here all day." and that was crazy. And it kind of set the tone for what happened on the trip. Because if you read the book, it kind of reads like an adventure, basically. And it kind of and the craziest things happened. We met the most wonderful people, all of whom were absolutely incredible. And we kind of and were so nice to us that we kind of we were bowled over by it, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of great like chance encounters in the book, and yeah, it definitely does. It, you know, so for those who haven't read the book, it's literally organized as a day by day account of what you experience. So you know, yes. So but I think in reading that, it's both kind of an interesting story, because I think probably for a lot of us who are going to Celebration and to the various, you know, there's a conference, academic conference right before it, this year, I think it's probably going to be a different experience this time, because I think they've started to like capitalize on some of these things, like, oh, there's all these Prince fans in town, like, let's organize some walking tours to the different sites, and you know, those kinds of things that for whatever reason weren't there when you went. So I think there's kind of an interesting story there about you guys just kind of like finding your way, you know, just on the strength of your own knowledge, which is quite impressive. I mean, some of these addresses are, you know, they're in the biographies or whatever, like Russell Avenue, where Prince, you know, lived with Andre Simone's family for a while. But some of them I didn't, I would not have known where to look for, and you guys managed to find them.
The internet was our friend.
Yeah.
there was a lot of places that we already knew about, but there were also a lot of places that we I had to do a bit of research for, which was but they all paid off. And you were right when you were saying there was kind of lots of chance encounters. When I got back and people started asking me about it, I kind of, when I was talking about it, I kind of felt like they were thinking, this can't have happened, this can't be real, this surely not. But I assure you, everything that's in the book happened. It was a case of being in the right place at the right time 100 times. When I got back, I didn't actually think that anybody would be that interested in it. Weirdly, I don't know why I thought that. But I got back and a few people, well, several people asked me about it. And I didn't intend doing anything about it. I didn't intend writing a book. I didn't intend giving talk. I ended up on the BBC, on the radio, talking about it for an hour. And that was kind of, how has this happened? This wasn't what I planned to do.
Right.
And the book... I mean, even the book came about by accident. I've got a friend who's a publisher, who basically said to me, "Write a book."
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I was like, kind of thinking, "Oh, I don't know if this is kind of if it would work." I have an English degree that mm-hmm. I only got a few years ago from university. I went back to university when I was 38 or 39, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an English degree just for the hell of it, really. It was just something I wanted to do. So my wife was happy that I used it for something, so that was cool. but yeah, it all kind of, and I think the book's popularity, and I think why people are liking it, is because it's kind of by accident.
Uh-huh.
Because in the whole Prince world, I'm nobody. I'm just a Prince fan. And I think I think I own pretty much every book that's ever been written about him.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, they're all written by music scholars or rock journalists or music critics. And there are very few that are just written by a fan.
Right.
And I think other fans who've read my book can relate to it a lot because I'm the same. We're mm-hmm. the same. And I think when you say that the book goes day by day, it's literally in some places it's literally a minute by minute account of what we did.
Right.
And I've had lots of messages from Prince fans on social media saying, "I'm taking your book with me and using it as a guide."
Yeah.
And you can do that. You can literally, it tells you how to go from one street to the next street to the next street to get from one place to the next. And the reason that it's like that is it's for my own memory.
Uh-huh.
As well as it being nice that I've got a book on my shelf that's got my name on it, and it's about my musical hero.
Right.
It's my memory of it. When we were at Paisley Park, we weren't allowed to take photographs.
Right.
So the description that is in the book of what the building was like and what the rooms were like, that's all kind of for my memory too.
Mm.
And obviously there was lots of people there. There's 2,000 fans there for the celebration, I think, or something like that. And I think it works for them as well. Again, I've had lots of messages from fans who were there who've said, "Thank you for writing the book. This is like my account of it now." And I think that's why people like it.
I know that reading the book made me think that I need to take like a little notebook when I'm in Paisley Park, because my memory is terrible, and not being able to rely on, you know, photos or videos or anything like that. Like it would be, you know, sort of tragic to like have this experience and then just not remember it. So I feel like I'm just going to be scribbling in a notebook the whole time.
I didn't actually do any scribbling while I was out and about.
Uh-huh.
I made a few little notes when I was back at the hotel each evening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I went with two guys who were 20 or 21. And their memories are incredible.
Yeah.
So, when I was writing the book, I was writing it kind of as it happened. It took me about 3 or 4 months to write it.
Uh-huh.
And as I was writing it, I was in contact with them all the time, saying, "Do you remember this? Can you remember what happened when we went from here to here?" And I did that in order to make sure that it was right and an accurate version of events, but also because, like you, my memory's not. It's I'm at an age now where it's kind of things are sometimes a little bit hazy. So yeah. To have them as backup. If I'd have done the trip by myself, I'd have probably taken 1,000 notes a day. But yeah, I knew that Jonathan is—he's got some sort of like photographic recall or something. He's got the most amazing memory, and it was really useful to have that. So yeah, I really appreciated the fact that they were with me, and we crammed a lot in. There was a lot. We did a lot in the time we were there, and you can see that in the book.
So for people who, like you, will be traveling, and like me, actually, I grew up in the Midwest and for some reason never made it to Minneapolis. I waited until I moved onto the, you know, on the East Coast to make my trip.
Further away.
Yeah. You know, for people like us, I guess, who are visiting Minneapolis for the first time, what are some of your... What should we definitely make sure to do?
Okay, well, obviously, Celebration 2018 is a must. Yeah, that was just absolutely mind blowing. It was incredible. Words can't even even now. I still can't believe that I actually walked through the front door of Paisley Park and went inside the building and kind of saw the things that I saw there. I mean, and it's all kind of documented in the book. Mm-hmm. So that's a must. Also, the tour of First Avenue is incredible. You need to do that one. To stand on the stage where we recorded Purple Rain.
Right.
It was amazing. That was the first thing we did the first morning we got there. Was the tour of First Avenue. Other things that you need to do. Obviously, you need to go to everything. Really, I kind of. Buy the book and just follow it.
Right.
Everything's there that you need to do. We pretty much got everything in there. And there wasn't a single place that we went to that didn't feel like it was worth going to it. If that makes sense. You know, even the places that weren't there, like the hospital.
Right.
Because the hospital is just a couple of blocks from the first house the first apartment that Prince ever lived in. And we had no way of knowing which building was which. I think the hospital's even got a different name now. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of we were looking at the buildings, and we had no idea which one it was. But we still went, and I still felt it was worth going because it's the site of where Prince was born. So that was important. It felt like it was important for me to go there, even though we weren't sure what building it was. It didn't matter. But Moonsong Studio. The original one in the little house was amazing. And there's a funny story about that one. When we got there, we parked the car outside, and it was the middle of the afternoon. The street was completely deserted. There was nobody around. And we stood in front of the house taking some photos. And I went up to the front door and stood on the path, and my friend was taking a picture.
Right.
And I turned around, and over my shoulder, I spotted a little purple sign in the window. just about 6 inches long, saying, and it was a little plaque just saying, "Welcome to Moonsound Studios, established 1974."
Wow.
And I was like, that was just an amazing thing to see. We sat outside. There was nobody around. We sat outside the house for half an hour. We played Soft and Wet on the car radio. on the car stereo, and that was it. We were on to the next one. But there was everywhere was just incredible, amazing, an amazing experience, an amazing city. Everybody bent over backwards to kind of accommodate us, and were really nice. We met lots of amazing people, and yeah, it was just a once in a lifetime thing to do. If I had to, I can't even single one place out that was kind of.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, other than kind of Paisley Park itself, everywhere else that we went to was worth going to. We went to Rudolph's Barbecue. You're familiar with that?
I only from the book.
Right. Yeah, we went there. It was really early on the morning. It was on our itinerary, but we kind of found it by accident. We kind of stumbled across it. We were kind of a couple of blocks away from it, and we were just, oh, it's here. We were kind of, it's here. Well, let's go there. So we went straight there, and it was really early on the morning. And obviously, it's a bar, so I wasn't expecting it to be open at kind of 9:30 in the morning or 10 a.m. or whatever it was. And we got there, and I heard some music coming from inside. And so I opened the door, and we walked in. And a girl was behind the counter, and she started talking to us. And the place was deserted; there was nobody in the place at all. And then she took us right through the bar, to a little booth where these two guys were sitting. And one of the guys was the guy who owns the place, and he started talking to us. And then they started telling us all these Prince stories, and we were like, "Oh my god!" And it kind of just that happened everywhere.
That's kind of the impression that I get that. It's really interesting to me that Minneapolis is just like they're so the whole city is so proud of
yeah,
Prince.
Yeah.
And also it seems like so many people have had some kind of encounter with Prince, even if it's just like, oh, I was, you know, in the checkout line when he came through Target or something, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this weird small town kind of feeling around a, you know, global superstar. Like it's, I can't think of anything quite like it. You know, like I'm from Southeast Michigan,
yeah.
And, you know, have spent some time in Detroit, but you're not always, you know, people aren't always coming to you with their like George Clinton stories.
Yeah.
You know,
like yeah.
it's just a different kind of feeling than I've than I've ever heard.
Yeah. It was very strange. It kind of, and I think that kind of mentality around him humanized him a lot. It kind of made him more real to us, and certainly to me. People that were in his inner circle that we met just kind of embraced us and said, "Come on, come along for the ride." And we got invited to nightclubs to watch people perform, and just everybody we met, it was just absolutely crazy, and everybody, including the people that worked with him and worked for him, were exactly like us about him, which kind of blew our minds. That kind of everybody, even the members of his band, had him on a pedestal and said he was like the most amazing. And obviously, you would understand that they're going to say that because they work with him, but not to the extent where it happened. You know, literally everybody we spoke to worshipped him, which was just incredible to see. And to see his family, his sisters and half-brothers, step-brothers on the stage and just kind of acknowledging it. And you could see that even they were kind of blown away by the reception that they got.
Mm-hmm.
To get that close to so many people that were part of his world and not expect to, yeah, it kind of made him more real. We walked on one day. We walked into Paisley Park, and I walked in with Bobby Z, just chatting away like I'm talking right. to you now. We're just chatting away, and all the time he was speaking to me, I was just thinking, this is really happening. I can't believe this is happening. And he was a really sweet guy, really nice, and we chatted away for a couple of minutes as we were walking through the atrium. We went into the soundstage together. And then I kind of made excuses and left. But yeah, it was just amazing to see how many people loved him. And you're right, everybody had stories about him, from waitresses in restaurants that we were in, talking about seeing him in the middle of the night in supermarkets and stuff. It was just, I mean, the first place we went to when we arrived, the plane landed, we got in the car, drove to the hotel. Actually, we drove to Paisley Park first and had a look at it, just sat outside. And then when we drove to the hotel, we went into the hotel, dumped our stuff, and then we thought we'll go for something to eat. So we went to a bar, which was just a couple of doors along from the hotel. And there was one guy, just the guy who owned the manager or whatever, he kind of started talking to us. And he had a Prince story. And it was the first person we'd met. And that kind of set the tone for the whole trip, really.
There's just kind of a feeling of community around Prince's fans that makes this kind of thing. I can't think of another artist that would inspire this kind of event. And certainly for me, I haven't, there's not ever been another artist that I would, you know, go to basically a fan convention about, you know, like this is very unusual, behavior for me.
Definitely. It is for me too. There's no other artist I would, all told, I had four plane rides, four flights,
uh-huh.
Traveled however many thousands and thousands of miles. There's nobody else I would do that for.
Right.
Nobody else.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a little bit like being in a cult, but you know, it's at least nobody has, you know, tried to make me poison myself yet. So it could be worse.
It's a great cult.
Right.
It's kind of, and since 2016, I think lots of fans have come together and created kind of, like groups and kind of, like you say, communities, and people meet up and all that kind of thing. I've been invited to a couple of those in the next couple of months. I'm going to one in Edinburgh in Scotland, where I'm from, not really. And then one in Birmingham. On the back of the book, I've kind of been invited to those, which is cool. And when the Prince exhibition at the O2 in London. Opened back in November.
Right.
The first time that I went on the I think it was the opening. I actually went the day the book came out. It was November the 10th. I went. I went there, and nobody really knew about the book then. And it was the day that it came out. And a few people were there, and we talked about it and stuff. And then I went back in January, and it was like being part of the family. I knew there must have been 150 people came up to me. You're the guy who's written the book. And new friendships have been forged from that.
Right.
Tons and tons of, I must have had, since the book came out, I must have had 250, 300 Facebook friend requests from people all over the world. And they're all lovely. It's just like a really nice, like you say, it's like a community. Or a cult, but
right.
it's been great for part of the healing process, I think, and kind of coming to terms with what happened. I think it's helped a lot of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, and part of we were talking about, you know, sometimes being really into something that, I mean, I feel like a lot of people appreciate Prince, but it's so easy to kind of go down a rabbit hole with him where it gets to the point where only other people who have been down that rabbit hole really fully understand. So, I think when we kind of lost him so suddenly, it was like we all kind of needed to talk to somebody that was like, no, you know, not just, oh, that's, he was young and, you know, whatever, but it was like he was so much a part of our lives that you need to find other people to kind of share that with.
Definitely. And going there and meeting hundreds and hundreds of people that were all feeling the same way that I felt.
Right.
I felt like I was allowed to kind of be myself.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I talk about this in the book when we were looking at the tribute fence outside in the grounds of Paisley Park. There's a fence with thousands of tributes on, and complete strangers were kind of hugging me and kind of putting hands on my shoulder and to feel a part of that and knowing that there are other people who feel exactly the same way that you do.
Right.
It was just incredibly special. Incredibly special. Come on.
You mentioned the. I kind of wanted to ask you about this because, you, like I said, you're only the second person I've talked to for this show from the UK.
Okay.
I wasn't able to make it to the O2 exhibition, and I wanted to ask what that experience was like, especially from somebody you know you've been to Paisley Park and you've been to the My Name Is Prince, which I think is in Amsterdam now.
An Amsterdam mirror, yes, yeah.
Yeah, so what? Tell me a little bit about that.
Obviously it was the 10th anniversary. It's been 10 years since he played at the O2 in London.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to several of the shows there at the time. And to go back was really emotional. Obviously with me living as far away as I do from London,
right.
I don't really go there that often. And before November, last November when I went there. The exhibition, the last time I was actually in at the O2 was seeing Prince in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
So to go back again 10 years later was really an emotional experience, and seeing things that I'd seen when I was there, kind of like all the sort of the flight cases that he was wheeled on stage on and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and seeing all that kind of thing kind of brought it all back again. And we watched, we went into a room and watched a video of Prince performing at the O2 from 10 years ago, and it just felt like I was back there again, like in the centre of this whole huge storm that was happening at the time. Seeing his things there was a bit surreal. There's a finality to it. It was kind of I saw all his belongings and stuff. I saw a lot when I was at Paisley Park up close in inside the building.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of felt right seeing it there, seeing it kind of shipped across the Atlantic to here. It was more surreal seeing it, and this time it was like a huge properly set out exhibition, and it kind of I felt a kind of little bit of detachment from it, I think. When it was here, I think it was simply because it was here rather than there. I mean, the exhibition itself was incredible. It was an amazing exhibition to give however many thousands of people went to it the opportunity to stand that close to the outfits that he wore and his instruments and his personal effects. Even kind of there was the handwritten notes and lyrics and stuff like that. Seeing all that. Up close for anybody is kind of, for particularly a fan, it's just crazy to see that stuff. And the guys that I took with me here, because I went to it twice,
mm-hmm.
The guys that I took with me were not the guys that came to Paisley Park with me. So the guys that came to it here were blown away by it, kind of like I was when it was in Paisley Park. And you walked through it went from era to era, and there was kind of an audio guide taking you around with the actual audio guide was recorded by a guy who showed me around Paisley Park, bizarrely. So that was hearing his voice again. I didn't expect to ever hear his voice again. So when I did, that was nice. And it was kind of, it kind of had a finality to it, and there were people there that were upset and emotional, which is understandable.
Right.
It kind of offered a new perspective than it did at Paisley Park, because there was things like we went into a room and we actually held Prince's guitar,
wow.
Which was just kind of we were sat on a little seat and they just handed us the guitar and I was just holding his guitar thinking he's played this guitar. So things like that were really cool. And it was an amazing experience to see it again. I didn't think that I would get the opportunity to see it again.
Right.
So that was nice that I got to see it again. And since I got back, lots of people have asked me if I'm going to go back to Minneapolis.
Right.
And I don't actually intend ever going back. That's not to say that I'll never go back. I might go back in so many years' time or whatever, but I don't have any plans to go. When I got back, my wife said to me, go every year if you want. besides the fact that it costs a lot of money,
right.
I miss my family a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of said to her, I don't think I'd get the same experience again because of all the things that happened kind of by accident. and being in the right place, and serendipitous, just being in the right place at the right time. I don't think I will get that again, so I don't really intend going back there. So to get the opportunity to see it again at the exhibition was great.
Yeah, I was when they first announced the exhibition, I thought it was just for the O2 and that was it. And so yeah. Now that it's kind of, it seems like it's turning into a touring thing, which I think is
it
great,
looks like it,
because
yeah.
not everybody is willing or able to make that trip to Minneapolis.
Yes.
And so, you know, like this summer there's a David Bowie touring exhibition that's coming to New York, which is, you know, fairly close to me. And so
yeah.
I'm going to be able to see that. It would be great if something similar was able to just kind of come around the world for Prince too, because
yeah, I think that's what's going to, it looks likely that that's what's going to happen, I think.
Yeah.
I think if that does happen, I think it's a good idea for that to happen because Minneapolis is, it's not an easy place to get to.
Right.
By any stretch, it's and for me, there is no other reason that I would go there other than Prince.
Right.
It's not somewhere. It doesn't have a beach, and it doesn't. Yeah. You know, it's not like a. When I, as a European, when I go on holiday, we go places where it's hot and there's a beach.
Right.
And that's not Minneapolis. To give the people the opportunity to see the things that are at the exhibition. Can only be a good thing. And it does, like you say, lots of people can't or aren't able to go to Minneapolis. So, yeah, I think if giving everybody the opportunity to see it all works. And I think it's, and I think there's obviously an audience for it. So, yeah, I hope it goes on and on.
Well, I'm really excited to go next week. And I really appreciated the chance to kind of get a little bit of a preview through your book. I think, you know, other people like me who are heading to Celebration 2018 and haven't read Stewart's book yet, you still can. It's a pretty fast read. So I think you can, you know, just kind of read it on the plane even. And I think it makes me very optimistic about the trip. And, you know, I've planned this trip like you, as with the idea that it will be a once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah.
For all I know, I might end up going every year, but you know, I think, even if it is just once, it just seems like such an amazing opportunity. You know,
yeah.
my only regret is that I didn't, you know, I didn't do it while Prince was alive. And that's a shame, because there were opportunities to be in Paisley Park while he was still there. But you know, you kind of didn't, I didn't really appreciate that until it was no longer possible, I guess.
Yeah. I think I probably the same. Yeah. But like you said, for me, it was a once in a lifetime thing. Given that the fact that I'm kind of 4,000 miles
yeah.
from there,
yeah.
It's a long way to go. I'm hoping that one day I will go back there, but I don't have any plans to do so in kind of the near future. But anybody that does go, whether it's for Celebration 2018 or whether you just go and you do the tour of the places that he grew up in and worked in,
mm-hmm.
It's just an incredible experience to do it. It was an amazing, amazing experience. One of the certainly one of the greatest things I've ever done. I would thoroughly recommend anybody to do it if you get the opportunity. Take it with both hands and just go and just immerse yourself in it and just see kind of how he lived and where he lived and the people that he knew, and it makes him certainly more real as a human being, and it helps with, like I say, with the healing process. It definitely helped me, definitely.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I'll have a link up on the website so anybody, you know, visiting can buy your book. If you're just listening to the podcast, it's Minneapolis Rain, Rain REIGN. by Stuart Willoughby. It's a really fun read. I just wanted to mention though, one of the things that I think make this a fun book, even outside of the Prince thing, is it's just fascinating to me as somebody from the Midwest to read, you know, from the perspective of tourists visiting. Like it cracked me up that I don't remember which of your friends it was, but one of them like always made a point of going to Buffalo Wild Wings when he was in the States. It's just so funny to hear, you know, stuff like that from a totally different perspective. You know, so
yeah, that's Ben. He likes his wings.
So, thank you again, Stuart, for coming on.
Thank you. It's been great. I really enjoyed it.
Once again, thank you to Stuart Willoughby for coming on the show and for writing his book, Minneapolis Rain. Get it before you go to Celebration, if you're going to Celebration. And if you buy it from the link on the Dance Music Sex Romance website, I will even get a nominal fee from that. But however you buy it, you know, please check it out. If you're in Minneapolis next week and you see me, come say hi. I am about as non-threatening a person as my voice sounds. And let me actually get one more extra plug in. You may remember a friend of the show, Paul Bonomo, aka Snacks. He is working on launching his latest album as a vinyl release. It looks fabulous. It's on Pledge Music. So if you heard his episode where we talked about the connections between Prince and the gay community, throw him some change for the vinyl record. I'll have a link on the website, and you should be able to get there if you just search Snacks, SNAX, on pledgemusic.com. And otherwise, just the usual, please continue to check out the blog and the podcast at princesongs.org. Follow us on your podcast app of choice. We're Dance Music Sex Romance. And once again, if you see me in Minneapolis, come say hi. I'm excited to be there and to, you know, meet some of these people that I've been talking to online for the last couple of years. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.